All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. Coming up, I'll tell you why Dak Prescott is a better leader than Cam Newton. But we begin today with Matt Ryan. When evaluating Ryan's 2018 debut, Randy Moss comes to mind. Straight trash, homie. My love affair with Matty Ice ended last night during the Falcons' ugly 18-12 loss to the defending champion Eagles. I spent the last 3 years championing Ryan's as an elite quarterback capable of duplicating his 2016 MVP season. One guy was named MVP, and it's Matt Ryan. He is one of the best two or three quarterbacks in the league right now. Those days are done. Ryan lacks the essential characteristic of a great quarterback, courage in the pocket. You heat up Matty Ice and he melts. He's Matty Melt. Under pass rush pressure, he loses all accuracy. He doesn't throw on time. He can't find his second and third options. He takes ridiculous sacks rather than throwing the football away. Matty Melt looked like a mid-major quarterback making his preseason debut last night. With a chance to win the game late, Matty Melt never threw a pass in bounds once the Falcons reached the red zone. He floated everything out of the end zone. He never gave his receivers a chance. A lot of people want to blame second-year offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian. He's been a disappointment as a replacement for Kyle Shanahan. Last year, I blame Ryan's struggles on Sark. Not last night. It doesn't matter the play call if the quarterback doesn't throw the ball in the field of play. No play can work if Julio Jones has to leap out of bounds just to catch the ball. Last night, Ryan was 1 of 9 throwing with an interception inside the red zone. He completed less than half of his 43 passes. Several of his completions forced the receiver to fall to the ground just to make the catch rather than advance the ball. On at least 2 of his sacks, he could have easily thrown the ball away. Matt Ryan is not an elite quarterback. The Falcons will regret giving him a $150 million contract extension. All right, joining me now, 3 former NFL players. Bucky Brooks, a longtime NFL cornerback and scout. Brian Cox, a Pro Bowl and Super Bowl champion linebacker. And Greg Jennings, a Pro Bowl and Super Bowl champion wide receiver. Guys, thanks for joining me. I am completely off the Matt Ryan train. That was a train wreck last night. You predicted it, Brian. I got to give you credit. Unfortunately, I watched the game with Brian, and all I heard all last, I told you, Jason. I told you. I told you. I told you.
Well, it's Schwartz, man. Schwartz came up with a great game plan. It's the second or the third time, actually, that he's thwarted him in the red zone and didn't allow Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons to get in. Sometimes people are great coordinators and not good head coaches, and that's Schwartz. I mean, he's a hell of a coordinator. But the funny thing to me is laughing at you last night every time Matt threw the ball. You said, that's not on target. That's a bad pass.
That's not on time.
That is the ultimate fan. Like, to me, like, I just kept saying, okay, here comes the pressure. Here comes the pocket collapsing. And you can see it. The thing that I'll say also is just Matt doesn't play well in Philly, his hometown. But there's no reason to panic. I mean, he's had rough outings against the Eagles the last 3 times out. This offense will be prolific. And Matt is a good quarterback.
You were on that Falcons coach's staff. I know he's a good quarterback, but he's not elite. I don't think we'll ever see that MVP thing again. You were on that coach's staff. Is he a guy that's tough in the pocket? I don't think so.
He's tough in the pocket. Last night would have been maybe he got a little jumpy at times. You would, too, if you get hit like he was getting hit. I mean, so I don't know any quarterback. You can go get Montana, you can get Marino, you can get Brady. If the middle of the pocket crashes, they collapse.
I've seen not the great ones.
Tom was ready to collapse in the Super Bowl when we sacked him 6 times in the first half.
What did he do, though?
Well, he
what
came
did
back.
He do? Okay. He threw it in bounds.
I think here's the problem when it comes to Matt Ryan. When I'm looking at the highest average salaries, he's right behind Aaron Rodgers. And when you pay a quarterback $30 million, there's a standard and a level of expectation that you want to see him play at. And this is the problem. This is the problem I felt like Julio Jones had. When you look in the locker room and you look at Matty Ice and you expect him to be an elite quarterback, but we all know that he's not one of the VIPs at the position. It is hard. It is hard for everybody, even the offensive coordinator, to validate him as a $30 million quarterback when his game is not that of an Aaron Rodgers or someone in that ilk.
I don't think that he's elite. When you talk about elite quarterbacks, you wouldn't mention his name in the first five guys. He's a more than capable guy. I think the problem is Atlanta's running Kyle Shanahan's offense and Steve Sarkisian is having to call an offense that isn't his. Yep. That's the problem. That's why they're struggling.
Look, I'm not throwing in the towel on Matt Ryan. I'm not. I've never called him an elite quarterback. I think he's a really good quarterback, more than capable of getting the job done.
Yes.
What we saw last night was week one. Week one, when you haven't even thrown a pass to a Julio Jones in the preseason because he never got a snap.
You know what the Falcons should do? Honestly, you're right. It was week one. So don't give him that $30 million. Whatever you owe him for that $30 million, don't give it to him week one because he wasn't ready. I mean, they gave him $30 million.
We can't just discount what you're talking about with Schwartz and that defense. He went up against the best defense in the NFL. Like, he didn't go up against some subpar defense.
We can't let him go now. Like,
I'm not letting him go.
When we pay top dollar for the quarterback is supposed to make everything right. When you're in that high cotton, mm-hmm. that $30 million, you don't have your Twitter off, but you're supposed to be the Febreze. You're supposed to make everything that stinks smell good. Matty Ice, when they wrote him that check, the expectation is he makes everything better. It doesn't matter who's around him. He has to get it done. If not, why are we paying him?
Because that's what the position requires.
If you want
a good quarterback, not even an elite quarterback, you're in the $22 to $26 million range.
Why, though?
Greg, I can't believe as a receiver.
Because they're white.
As a receiver, those balls were just inaccurate. You didn't even have a chance.
Listen, I hear you. I hear you. And my frustration with Matt Ryan has always been in the red zone. That's been his Achilles heel his entire career, the red zone efficiency and his inability to score touchdowns. When you look at last year in the divisional game, they threw the ball 4 out of 4 times, and it didn't work for them. They are overthinking this thing. Like, this year, week one, they go down first possession, and they have 4 shots. They run 3 out of 4 times. They're over, and then the last possession, you completely miss Julio Jones. But my issue with Matt Ryan is he can't extend the play and improvise and play backyard football. That's what separates the Russell Wilsons, the Aaron Rodgers, and those
30.
Guys like that.
But don't give him $30 million now.
Here's what I say on that drive when you talk about they ran the ball 3 times. When you look at that series, the first drive of the game, okay, they run up the middle for 0 yards. Then they try to run outside, they lose yards. Then they try to throw the ball to Freeman down there on the 1 yard line. And then they lose yards on the 4th down play. They can't run the ball against.
Freeman was open in the end zone and Matt Ryan was inaccurate.
I will
give you that. At $150 million, that's unacceptable. That man owes everybody in that locker room an apology. That was an embarrassing performance. It was an embarrassing performance.
As a defensive player, you always say, okay, we had every opportunity.
Held them to 18 points, Brian.
Yeah, but you could have held them. You gave up that last touchdown that you didn't really have to give up to. That was
the man was in the red zone. They were inside the 10 on 3 or 4 different occasions and came away with 12 points.
I'm just saying, as a team player, is not what the offense did. You always look and say, what could we
have done
better?
Matty Melt. To the Eagles, who took advantage of Matty Melt's terrible night to eke out an ugly win, Jim Schwartz's defense was solid as usual, but the offense couldn't do anything in the first half. And aside from a rerun of the Philly special, Nick Foles was unable to recreate the magic of last year's playoff run. I wasn't impressed with the Eagles last night.
No bad wins.
I agree with you. But there are a lot of bad penalties and a bad game and Matt Ryan just handing you a game. I'm impressed with the Eagles' front 4 defensively.
Front 8, because they sent out a wave.
You're right, front 8. And their ability to heat up a quarterback, 13 hits on the quarterback. I think they led the league last year in hits on the quarterback. Hats off to them. You can take that anywhere. Home, road, cold, hot, wherever. Everything else to me,
But the thing that I will tell you is, it feels much better to make corrections when you win.
No question.
Than when you lose. So would you rather be in Philly's locker room or would you rather be in Atlanta's locker room right now with 10 days to play? I'd rather be in Philly's locker room.
I think their toughness is the thing that stood out to me. Wasn't the best game offensively, but they hung in there. Defense gave them a chance. You talked about Jim Schwartz and that defense, being able to rush four, drop seven. They have everything that you look for in a championship team, and they're able to do it with a backup quarterback. To me, it speaks volumes about the team and the roster that they've constructed, that they can play around the quarterback. They don't necessarily need the quarterback to be the primary playmaker.
Doug Peterson said it best. We have a really good team. This was a great team win. It's not going to always look pretty in the way we as viewers or spectators want it to look offensively because they were a high-powered offense last year. That's immediately the expectation we have. It takes longer, and you can attest to this more than anybody, for a for an offense to get clicking when the season starts than a defense. It's just that's the way it is. And when you're going up against a defense like the Atlanta Falcons, who have a really good defense, it's going to show. I was thoroughly impressed with the Philadelphia Eagles' defense. Not as much impressed with their offense, but more importantly with the team collectively, how they showed resolve, how they didn't bend. They could have bent. This team is the only – they didn't give up a single second half, under two minutes, points last year. They didn't give a single point. All of last year, the playoffs, and going to the first half – they only gave up field goals in the last 2 minutes. That is bend, not break. That is how you win championships.
I'm frustrated with myself because literally
– you wanted to see more.
No. Yesterday I said on this show, Atlanta's my Super Bowl team. That blew up in my face. I said on this show and said, I don't think Philly's ready for the start of the season. That blew up in my face. Then I had to sit through Brian Cox talking smack to me all night in my own house, drinking my liquor, eating my food, and talking trash on me. Cause Brian, it was a joy because Brian knows the game, and it was a joy. But I just felt like, man, I start out the season, Atlanta's not what I expect, and Philly, I'm grudgingly giving them credit. You guys are talking the toughness, the playing around Nick Foles and still beating an Atlanta team that I thought was good. Cowherd had him at the top of his hierarchy yesterday. So I guess I do have to grudgingly tip my hat to the Philadelphia Eagles and Brian Cox. Tune in Monday as my new co-host Marcellus Wiley joins Speak for Yourself. We'll break down week one in the NFL. Plus, we'll have special guests Rod Woodson, Tony Gonzalez, and Michael Vick. Catch us at our new time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific. All right, welcome back. Brian Cox, Greg Jennings, and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Le'Veon Bell saga rolls on after several of the Steelers' offensive linemen went after Bell over his holdout. Antonio Brown took to Instagram to support him, writing, "Ready to roll whenever you get back with us, family." And even Mike Tomlin couldn't deny that the situation might affect the team.
I think it can, whether it's negative or positive, is up to the team. And I've been very thoughtful about my words. I've been very thoughtful about my approach with the staff in terms of our planning, with the players, with you guys. I didn't want to get into speculation. I didn't want to waste time and energy. The two most important variables was when he showed up and once he showed up, the condition that he was in. Until that time, we were going to remain focused on those that were working and their preparation. And so, that remains the same.
All right, look, my concern is eventually this could spin negative for Mike Tomlin. If Pittsburgh rallies around this situation and if they want to go out and prove that they don't need Le'Veon Bell and they play well, this will be a win for Mike Tomlin. If they struggle out of the gate, the media is immediately going to pounce on this Le'Veon Bell situation. And how did Mike Tomlin allow these offensive linemen and other players to attack Le'Veon Bell? There's a rift in the team. This is where I think the organization and the media may turn a finger and turn some of their attack on Mike Tomlin.
I don't think so. When you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, they've had three coaches in the history of the organization. They understand that you're going to have some lean years. They understand that you're going to have some success, but you can't put this on Tomlin. So to me, the money deal, as we always talk about around this table, you don't talk about other people's money. How does that involve Tomlin? He don't have anything to do with
it. It's his team, and this is
unprecedented. No, it's the owner's team. It's the owner's team.
But they don't have anything to do with it. They hired him to lead the team.
But he can't write the check.
I got it. But the attack from his own offensive linemen and teammates, that's pretty unprecedented in the NFL. And it just happened to be on Mike Tomlin's team, which has a reputation because of Antonio Brown and other things, because of Le'Veon Bell, as undisciplined.
But let's look at his record. 116-60.
Got it.
659 win percentage. Yep. That's ninth all time. So over this span of games. So you can't put that on him, man. I just don't see it. He was under a little bit of trouble last year. At the end of the year, some of the partners wanted him out or whatever, but it didn't happen. The Steelers understand, I think. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, I think they do understand, but it does seem to be a buzz building about Mike Tomlin, and maybe there needs to be an exodus from him in Pittsburgh, despite his success, despite everything. We've heard Terry Bradshaw come out and talk about Mike Tomlin. When guys outside the organization who have been part of the organization are beginning to talk, typically, where there's smoke, there's fire. Someone is talking about Mike Tomlin, his ability to either control the team, win big games because people felt like they've underachieved despite his success. I do believe with Le'Veon Bell in this situation, if it wrecks the season and the team underperforms again, I do believe he will catch some flack and some fire as the coach because ultimately it falls on him as the leader of the team.
No, I'm with Brian on this one. This is not on Mike Tomlin. I don't think this can hurt Mike Tomlin. One player doesn't stop the show. Just because, and he doesn't, to your point, he doesn't write the checks. You think Mike Tomlin don't want Le'Veon Bell in-house? Absolutely. You think those guys don't want him in? They do, but just like AB said, we all we got, we all we need. That's how you have to approach it. You're not sliding Le'Veon Bell. It's not on Mike Tomlin. It is on us. We are the players that have to go out there and get it done. If Le'Veon Bell was here and he got hurt, we would still, it's happened before. Guys go down, we next man up. We got to still play the game. It's on us who we have. Get it done.
If an organization, if I'm the owner of the Steelers or the owner of any franchise, if I've made an organizational decision, we're drawing a line in the sand with Le'Veon on his contract. Mike, we bring you in. We don't want this to affect the team and the players. We don't want a lot of chatter and dysfunction around our decision as an organization with Le'Veon Bell. Can the organization, I said, you didn't handle it. You don't have, trust me, they paid the coach to control the players.
I think that's unrealistic. I think that's completely unrealistic when you try to – we can look at Oakland and Khalil Mack, their situation. You think it's going to impact their head coach,
John Gruden,
because of his inability to get him to stay. But it was almost like there was a line that was drawn of even communication. You know that Mike Tomlin has a good relationship with Le'Veon Bell, with most of the players in this locker room. So I don't think it impacts him in that way. These players have done this their entire last year, the year before. They've always spoken out.
At some point, it gets old.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say about that, and using the Raiders fallout as the example, we haven't heard a lot of players chirp after Khalil Mack was traded. We heard the one thing with Derek Carr, but we haven't heard all of this chatter around it. And to me, it seems like in that situation, John Gruden was like, look, this decision I made, I don't really want to talk about it. I want the team to talk about it. We're moving on. With this, because you have offensive linemen taking personal digs at a player, to me, it just seems like somewhere there's some discord, disconnect, where Mike Tomlin hasn't said, hey, man, we handle our business internally. We don't want the masses to know about what's going on in
Pittsburgh. Look at what happened with their Anthem deal. They couldn't even come to an agreement on that last year. That caused some discord.
But at the end of the day, Tomlin has taken them to the playoffs 8 of the last 11 years. At the end of the day, he's done a good job of being a leader of men. You go with Antonio Brown taking the camera of the conference after the playoff win. You look at this situation, they overcome these things when the games start and they go and play well for them. So I don't
see. Pittsburgh, to me, is one of the most proud and or arrogant franchises in all of professional sports. And what the Rooney family wants is their organization to run the same way as the New England Patriots under Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick controls this. You don't have these type fires in his situation. Even with the Malcolm Butler deal, people have been very careful with their words with a decision like Malcolm Butler, which was ridiculous. And so Pittsburgh, I think, has 7 NFL titles, and now the Patriots have 6. Mm-hmm. Again, the Rooneys are competing with Bob Kraft and about who is the most successful franchise in all of professional football. And they're going to eventually hold Mike Tomlin to that stand. They feel like they have the best run organization. They're not getting the productivity.
When you talk about the classiest organizations in football, you start with the Pittsburgh Steelers, New York Giants, New England Patriots, those three. And then the Green Bay Packers would be one that, you know, the community owns. But they are the standard bearer. They have always been the team out front, ahead of their time, the Rooney Rule and other things. I've not heard players that have played there, coaches that have coached there, that have left, that have had anything negative to say about the Rooneys. They understand this business, and that's why they've been so successful, because they haven't gone through coach after coach when things have gotten.
I want to correct. Steelers 6 titles, Patriots 5, not 7-6. All right, welcome back. Brian Cox, Greg Jennings, and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to the Cowboys, who opened the season on the road against the Panthers on Sunday. With Dak Prescott and Cam Newton facing off for the first time ever, Dak is looking to bounce back from a lackluster sophomore season, while Cam is looking for a fresh start under new offensive coordinator Norv Turner. All right, the question here, guys, is who would you want leading your team, Dak Prescott or Cam Newton? I'm going to vote Dak Prescott. I think Dak is a more stable leader. I think that there's some stats about pressure when under pressure. Dak is near the top of the league. Cam is near the middle towards the bottom of the league. On third downs, Dak, middle of the league. Cam at the very bottom of the league on third down. I understand that Cam has Norv Turner, and hopefully he can fix some of these things. But so far, when the pressure comes, Dak has been better under pressure. I think Dak is less emotional. And then Dak just isn't as dangerous out of the pocket as Cam Newton in terms of getting himself hurt.
Making plays.
No question about that. No question. I would rather have Dak leading my team.
Not me. I'd rather have Cam. You threw out some great stats. Don't matter to me.
What he does on third down doesn't matter.
You're talking about
what he does on third down doesn't matter.
You're an MVP, coach, Brian. A national champion in college. First pick of the draft, took his team to the Super Bowl, all that stuff. This guy can take a play that's screwed up, and he can make something of it. You know, you could have him lost. He's so big, he's bigger than most of the guys trying to tackle him. Mm-hmm. He can get loose in the pocket, scramble for a big first down late in the game. Not to mention the fact that Norv Turner's going to get him into a situation where
I wish I had a towel to throw over my head. The way that
I've beaten you every day this
Cam
week,
Newton.
So won't you?
You know how Cam Newton sits on the bench with a towel over his head, soaking. That's part of leadership.
That's his swag.
That's part of leadership.
That's his swag. But part of leadership is being who you are, and not being afraid to take a stance. Whether it's the crazy hats he wears, that's a part of his swag. That man is a ball player, and you'd hate to face him if you had a chance to go to the Super Bowl and you had to win a game. You'd rather see Dak than to see this man.
I don't disagree with you about Cam Newton being a better player than Dak Prescott, but I think in terms of leadership, who's the more steady, consistent influence, I would say Dak Prescott. I think as a coach, you would like to have someone that you know Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, he's going to be the same. I believe Dak Prescott is going to be the same wins and losses. I think it's easier to build around a guy that is going to display that kind of leadership than to the ups and downs,
Bucky,
ebbs and flows.
Bucky, but wasn't he the same guy that got beat up in college on spring break?
So he did.
Was that leadership that was when he was out there hanging out and got jumped by those guys? He's had some off-the-field stuff, too.
He has.
You never lost a fight.
Well, he was beat up
you
pretty bad.
You never lost a fight. You from
East
St.
No, because I'm swinging
you
first.
You from East St. Louis. You never lost a fight.
To my brothers? Don't.
You from East St. Louis.
To my brothers?
You know I got friends.
I'm swinging
in
first. You can call them.
I got friends in
I'm
we
swinging
the same
first.
Age, Brian. I know if, you we know are,
if we arguing, I'm swinging first. We ain't going to just sit here and argue. I'm going to get me a lick in.
Let me tell you, I'm going Cam, and I don't need you to be steady. I don't need you to tell me what to do and how to do it. I'm a grown man. Mm-hmm. I should know how to do all that. What I need from you is to, for me to trust that I can know every time you step on that field, the team that we going up against, that opponent, they got problems not only with me, but they got problems with you too. When you look at Dak Prescott, he doesn't pose that threat. Like, so I need my leader not only to lead by example, which is huge, but action speaks louder than words any and every day in our sport. You know that, and you know that.
And I get the actions, but I'm looking at Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott in 2 years has 16 games with a passer rating over 100. That is tied with Tom Brady. So we can sit here and act like Dak.
How many did they win?
He's 22-10 as a starter for the Cowboys. Now, look. I will say this. I'm not saying that he's a truck that he can carry the team, but when you put him with Ezekiel Elliott, they win a lot of games in Dallas. But when he has a strong running game, they win a lot of games. Well, so I'm saying
that's to be seen because that very great offensive line has been broken up because Travis Frederick and Martin, they're hurt. That's two of their best players. So we're yet to see if they can get that running game going with this offensive line that they're throwing out there this weekend in Carolina.
I'm rooting for Cam Newton. I hope Norv Turner fixes a lot of things, like him throwing the ball on time, him throwing the ball accurately. There's not a receiver around the league. We done heard from, was it Kelvin Benjamin this offseason, that already done told you a little bit of the truth on Cam Newton. And again, I'm hoping. MVP Cam that carried that team, love him. Hopefully we'll get back to some of that. But in terms of just day-to-day leadership, this is kind of a no-brainer, Brian.
And my son plays in Carolina. I might be a homer.
Yeah.
My son plays in Carolina.
Yeah, I wasn't going
to
go there.
I have to throw that out.
I just can't buy the day-to-day leadership. I can't go home every single day and somebody asks me, how was practice today? Was Cam a good leader today? I don't care. I don't care.
Right.
Like, I really don't care. Was Cam balling today, though?
Yes.
Yeah, he was, man.
Aren't you the same person that took a little knock on Aaron Rodgers' leadership?
Absolutely, but I ain't never knocked his play. I ain't never said I wouldn't go in that huddle with him again.
All right, let's move to New York, where the Giants host the Jaguars this weekend, which means we'll see $95 million man Odell Beckham Jr. go head-to-head with Jalen Ramsey, the mouth of the South. He's been trash-talking the whole league this offseason. Odell famously lost his cool against another big mouth corner, Josh Norman, but says this time will be different.
I think I learned my lesson, but this is probably, if not the best, one of the best corners in the league. There's no way around it.
A lot of people are going to try to make it about me and him specifically. That's not what it's about. Football's a team game. There's going to be 11 guys out there for us, 11 guys out there for them. So we're going to have to come together and do what we got to do to try to get a win. I'm going to try to do my part. It's 11 versus 11. It's not me versus him all game. I'll be on my fair amount, but I'm sure other guys will be on him as well.
That's interesting to see Jalen Ramsey try to tone down the rhetoric, but we all know what's going to happen out here on Sunday. This is going to be an emotional matchup between two of the most high-spirited players in the league. One of these guys is going to crack. And my vote is Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be the guy that cracks. He's got more pressure on him. He talked the talk. He wanted that $95 million contract, the highest paid receiver. He's now in New York. We've seen him on TV, on HBO. Why, I'm a zoo animal. He's going to crack. If I had to choose between which one of these two guys cracks on Sunday, it's Odell Beckham Jr.
I would agree with you with that. You know, coming off the injury from last season, coming off of the, you know, the potter in the room with the woman in Paris and all the off-the-field stuff, getting a big contract now. He wants to go out there and play well, but I think he's going to crack for a different reason. I don't think that Eli Manning can throw the ball to him.
There's another reason.
And I think that's going to be the point of frustration, not so much that Ramsey's covering him, but that Eli can't get him the ball the way he needs to.
I think the big thing, Jalen knows that he has a partner that is a legitimate dude. A.J. Bouye led the league in lower passer rating allowed. The tandem allows them. They don't even have to travel. Jalen Ramsey doesn't have to match up with Odell Beckham Jr. and chase him all over the field. So you have comfort in knowing that I can lean on my teammates. All he has to do is line up and play his game. The pressure will be on Odell just because typically When you sign a big deal, you feel the pressure of having to perform and you want to live up to it. He missed most of last season, so there are a lot of things in play. I believe he will feel the pressure more because Jalen Ramsey has a better support staff around him in terms of when he goes on the field.
The pressure is definitely on Odell.
Wide receiver.
It's on Odell, but I mean, for me, again, I've said this before today, like defenses, they get off to a better start. They're more equipped to start week one than offenses. Odell Beckham has to rely, to your point, on Eli Manning to get him the ball. So, yes, the pressure is going to be on Odell because if he is open or if he does create separation and he doesn't get that target or that opportunity that I like to call it, then the frustration will begin to mount. And so you'll see that on the sideline, like pacing the sideline, you can't really sit still. You want to live up to that big contract. But one thing that I read, and it's right here, New York general manager Dave Gettleman and head coach Pat Shurmur, they both have said Beckham has a new slate. That's why we see a new Odell Beckham. He understands I have a new slate. I have an opportunity to start fresh. So I'm not going to show all the antics. I guarantee some of his celebrations, which I hope he still celebrates, but they're toned down. But as far as his playmaking ability and what he provides, it'll still be there. The pressure is going to be mounted on him because he has to rely on someone else to get him the ball.
You just said something interesting. You think that there's a new Odell Beckham
because
there's a new slate.
Absolutely, 100%. I believe every bit of
new
that.
And improved.
What we're seeing out of Odell Beckham, his presentation, what we're seeing in the media, what we're seeing off the field. Number one, his work ethic has never changed. It's never been in question.
That's not what I'm talking about.
But to your point, though, I think the money takes some of that insecurity away.
He's good now.
I've arrived because you paid me like I see myself. So I don't have to do all the things. I don't have to
run around go and act play. Crazy.
I can come out and relax.
I think there's a whole different side of that argument is now that I have the money, I can go ahead and show you who I really, 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 really am.
No. And he wants all of that. He wants all 95, whatever they gave him, he wants all of it.
This ain't NBA money.
That's not the way to get it.
$95 million is a lot of money.
This is not NBA money. You don't get it once you sign the contract.
You got to make sure you get all of it.
You got to be out there for those years to get that money.
I get it. But he sounds good. It sounds good. But once Jalen Ramsey gets out there and starts running his mouth, all of this stuff, all the new Odell and all that, it's just not going to last.
But see, Odell's not really a talker by nature. Like, the Josh Norman thing was kind of like an outlier. That's not his normal MO. He's going to have fun and party and do all that in the end zone. But he's not a back-and-forth trash talker. That's not how he plays.
No. What I think Odell is there's some insecurity. And Odell, you can climb inside of Odell's head.
Insecurity in what?
In almost everything. I mean, you don't run around with blonde hair if there's not some issues. Brothers don't run around with blonde if there's not some issues. I'm just sorry. You just don't.
I haven't seen it in my neighborhood.
Thank you. Okay.
That's his look. That's his swag.
Jalen Ramsey's gonna start running his mouth, and trust me, he's gonna say a few things to push a few buttons, and Odell's gonna snap because that's who he is.
The only thing about that is Jalen Ramsey has seen the film, and Odell Beckham is a real dude on the field. And so all that talking and stuff like that, like, it's a little different thing than putting a chokehold on A.J. Green or A.J. Green getting upset and then flipping out. Odell Beckham Jr. requires you to be on your game. And so I know Jalen likes to talk and he's intensely competitive and all that. He's going to be more focused on slowing down 13 than getting into these verbal bars.
All right, welcome back. Brian Cox, Bucky Brooks are back. We're joined now by the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Minnesota, where Jimmy Garoppolo will take the field for the first time since landing a massive new contract in the offseason. Expectations are sky high for Jimmy G, who is yet to lose a start in the NFL, but Sunday he'll have to overcome the Vikings' dominant defense on the road. Even still, I think Jimmy G delivers here. And this is more of a hunch and a gut feeling that I think Jimmy G is going to keep it going. I think there's something special and magical about this kid. I know the 49ers lost their running back, Jared McKinnon, who they picked up. I still think Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G will be a special combination, the new Bill Walsh, Joe Montana moving forward. I'm going betting big on Jimmy G to keep it going.
You'll be without me. The Minnesota Vikings play such really awesome defense during the regular season. They got burnt a little bit by Philly in the playoffs. But during the regular season, they got Danielle Hunter coming off the edge, and they got Griffin coming off the other side. They got the best pass rush tandem off the edge, arguably to the Chargers with Ingram and Bosa. But those guys are awesome, man. So I look for Minnesota defense to suffocate Garoppolo and win the game. San Francisco 0-1 to start the season.
Now, I think it's going to be tough for Jimmy Garoppolo. A couple things work. Teams have had the entire offseason to see how Jimmy Garoppolo plays within Kyle Shanahan's system. I think you saw some of the issues in preseason pop up. We saw a lot of near-miss interceptions. We saw some turnovers kind of pop up. And I believe the Minnesota Vikings with Mike Zimmer and George Edwards, they're going to heat them up. They're going to find a way to create pressure. They do a good job of showing that double A-gap mug front. They're going to make Jimmy Garoppolo think. And you talk about the two guys on the outside. Sheldon Richardson was a big pickup for them. So now they have the ability to pressure you off the edges, but also get up the gut pressure. And I just don't know if they have enough weapons on the outside to run away from Xavier Rhodes and some of those other guys.
Brian, I'm glad for the first time since you've been here this week, we agree. I love the Vikings. I mean, it's good to be in agreement with a legendary linebacker. I mean, you guys covered everything, but I'm going to add one quick point here. Last year, everybody said, oh, well, Jimmy G lit up Jacksonville. Remember that? He can light up the Vikings. As Bucky said, there's a lot of tape on Garoppolo now. They got six games to look at. Mike Zimmer's been lights out. One of the best coaches in September the last 3 years. I think he's 7-1 against the spread. And the Vikings, by the way, one of the best home teams in the league. I love Minnesota in this spot. And remember, he's got to keep up with Kirk Cousins, who has Dalvin Cook back. And that Minnesota offense is going to score a lot of points. I don't think Jimmy G is going to get to the 20-point mark.
Look, I think all of you all have made great logical points. I'm rolling the dice with the Jimmy G momentum. I think he's important to the league. I think he's the next star quarterback. I think Kyle Shanahan, perhaps the next great coach. This is a momentum play for me and just a feeling that Jimmy G is going to be an enormous story this season, and it's going to start this weekend. And look, we saw last night, the defenses are way ahead of the offenses right now. People don't do anything, it doesn't seem, in the preseason, and it hurts the offensive teams. But I just think there's certain guys that kind of have that it factor. And it's just like what I saw last night. Matt Ryan had a chance in a dirty game to make a play late and cover up for a bunch of mistakes. If Jimmy G's in that same spot, if this is a low-scoring game and it comes down where he has a drive to win the game, he's going to do it. That's my feeling.
He going to get it. Them boys going to be hunting. Them Vikings, that horn going to be going, and them boys going to be hunting. I don't see it.
I agree with he's a potential face of the league down the road. But Whitlock, here's my concern. You give him a big contract, right? They paid him in the offseason. What did they build around him? Where's the help? He got no receivers. I mean, I don't trust Pierre Garçon and Goodwin here against a great cornerback matchup in Minnesota. I just feel like they need more weapons around him. When they lost McKinnon to injury, you're not turning into Alfred Morris? I mean, that's what you're looking at? I just don't think the weapons are there for Jimmy G.
I think it's going to be tough. I just think it's tough with Minnesota and what they can do defensively. The personnel, to me, you take Jimmy Garoppolo away, you go check by check. I just think at every position group, the Minnesota Vikings are superb. I just think they're a superior team. I think it's going to be really, really tough for Jimmy G to get it off.
I want to tack one more curveball on at the end. Just another interesting aspect of this game has nothing to do with Jimmy G. We're about to see Richard Sherman for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think coming off that Achilles injury, I think the Vikings are going to attack Richard Sherman, and it's not going to go well.
I don't see that. The one thing that Richard Sherman is really good at that goes underrated, he's really good at staying square at the line of scrimmage and not giving the release to the receiver that they want. And that makes a really – when Darrell Revis was on Revis Island, that's what he was the best at. He would stay square and wouldn't let a guy get past him. And when you kill the route at the line of scrimmage.
I think Richard Sherman was really smart. He went to a team that plays the exact same scheme that he left in Seattle. He understands where he is physically. He will do a good job of putting himself in a position where he can't get exposed. Maybe he plays bail and bails off a little bit so the speed doesn't become a factor. I think he'll be fine. If he does get got, I don't think it would be because of the injury. I think it would be because Stephon Diggs and now feeling really, really good.
All right, welcome back. Brian Cox is back for Last Call. Let's return to Philadelphia where the new catch rule was put to the test last night, with Julio Jones having a 52-yard catch called incomplete and then upheld on review. Brian, are you worried this wasn't ruled a catch?
No, I thought it was a good call because the angle when the ball went on his shoulder, we couldn't see it. And I think it, had they said that it was a catch, it would have been tough to overturn. So I have no issue with it.
I have a major issue with it. I thought we were the new rule and the adjustment to the rule was about making sure all the great plays stayed great plays. They just overturned a great play. It was a horrible call.
But we can't see on this angle when the ball goes on his shoulder before his back slides out of bounds if the ball ever touches
the ground. I see that as a catch, Brian.
It was still bobbling. It hit his face mask.
He's on the ground. A player had already touched him. He had the ball. That's a catch. That's why Atlanta lost the game.
It was a bobble.
Huge football game this weekend. Ball State at Notre Dame. My Cardinals, shockingly, a 34.5 point underdog. Brian, this is a crazy line. Did you set this line? Because somebody that doesn't know what they're talking about set this line.
What time the game start?
I think 12:30 Pacific.
It'll be over 12:31 Pacific.
Ball State will win in an upset. Riley Neal will have a huge game. James Gilbert will have a huge game. Jake White, Josh Miller on defense. Ball State, baby. We're number one. All right, that's it for us. We'll be back Monday.